Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. More voices weigh in on Ferguson a little bit later in this program. But first, with all the recent high-profile publicity about LGBT issues, same-sex marriage, Caitlyn Jenner, discrimination, how is it playing among teens who may be questioning or experimenting with their sexuality? It's an important issue for teens and their parents. We're going to be talking about that on today's program with a teen who identifies as bisexual and with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified psychologist in couples and family psychology who specializes in adolescent psychology. Wes Crenshaw has been with us before. Also joining us is Julia Poe, who, as a senior at Shawnee Mission East High School in Kansas, was honored as the 2015 National High School Journalist of the Year this past year. She was editor-in-chief of her high school newspaper and will be attending the University of Southern California this fall. She joins us from our sister station, KCUR, in Kansas City. Wes, good to see you. And Julia, thank you so much for being with us.
Nice to be here.
Thank you for having us.
And Julia, we'll begin by congratulating you on that wonderful national honor. That's certainly very, very prestigious and I'm sure well-deserved.
Thank you so much.
And you're excited about going to California.
Oh, I cannot wait. I seriously can't wait.
I want to see your vines of surfing out there. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, boy. That is not going to be a pretty sight, let me tell you.
Well, let's get on with some of the things we want to be talking about here today. Wes, I'll start with you because I'm a little bit confused. Not that that's so terribly unusual, but it is the case because, you know, we've been talking for a long time about LGBT issues. Now we've added a Q to all of that, and I see that there are various definitions. How should we approach that? What are we really saying here?
I will be interested in hearing. I think Julie and I have slightly different views on this, but Q stands for two different things. It can either stand for questioning, which I think is a big part of adolescent sexuality, or should be, where people are sort of self-reflecting on who they are as sexual people. And in my experience with teens, that's a big part for every teenager, is the questioning part. It also stands for queer, which historically has been a pejorative term, and that the gay and lesbian community has co-opted that term back or reappropriated that term as a sort of positive term. And what it really means is not straight. It means anything that is not straight. So the quick term is to simply say in the queer community, et cetera, et cetera. You get all the initials, and sometimes it's hard to keep up, GBLTQ, et cetera. So that's the general cue.
All right. Well, let me get Julia's take on that.
Yeah. So I think it just kind of depends on who you ask what Q stands for. But I'm hearing a lot more young people use the term queer. When I went out to California a week ago, was spending a week out there with some kids at a journalism camp, I heard that word thrown around a lot, and it always makes me flinch. It will never – I don't think it'll ever have a positive reaction from me just because I have heard people use it. I've heard guys, you know, in my gov class use it. I've heard people on my basketball team use it in such a derogatory manner that I can't see how the LGBT community can co-opt it. And, you know, it's kind of funny to hear people stumble over LGBT, and it's kind of hard to spit out when you're trying to go, you know, talk really fast. But the word queer just has such a deep negative emotion tied to it for me. And so it's been interesting to hear people using it more. I don't like it. I physically flinch whenever I hear it. And so I'm hoping that that will be a little fad that will kind of die away. I'm really hoping that word will go away because I'm not a fan.
It's a relatively new addition to the LGBT initials.
It depends on how big of an insider you are. In my world, seeing a lot of people who identify as queer, either genderqueer or queer in their sexual identity, that's just a term that you're supposed to use if you're one of the inside people. And so, but I absolutely, that's why I say Julie and I sort of differ in that. It really does vary. And it's somewhat, you'd think it was generational because I come out of an era when that word was very negative. And I was always surprised when Julia had that flinching reaction. But there are those who absolutely see it that way.
Well, now that we understand that a little bit better, let's move on. And Julia, I'll ask you this. How has the environment changed in the last couple of years with regard to LGBT issues in general. There's been an awful lot going on as have been part of a national dialogue. How has it changed for you?
Oh, it's been very interesting for me. You know, I had an interesting coming out process where I was dating a girl for a period of a year, and just slowly everyone in my life realized that we were dating without me really coming out to more than a handful of people. So for me, coming out, I never had a negative experience, which you tell people that I'm from Kansas. You tell people that you're from Kansas and that you're bi, and people automatically expect that you're just going to get so much hate. And I've never seen that. I've never seen anyone be anything but extremely positive. And whenever I come out to people, it's always an extremely positive reaction. You know, there's been a few people who have been worried because their faith maybe made them think that that was not okay, or they felt like it was a sin. But there was never that hate that people always talk about and people always say is a common reaction. What's interesting that's been changing over the past few years is just seeing how the kids younger than me are so much more open with their sexuality. And I think it's kind of can be seen through the GSA at my school.
And that's Gay Straight Alliance.
Right. Yeah. So our Gay Straight Alliance, my junior year, was maybe 10 or 15 kids who most of us weren't even out, but we kind of got together, ate cookies, and talked about, you know, our struggle on a weekly basis and just hung out and made really good connections. And then my senior year, this wave of freshmen came in, and there were like 35 kids that were just new, that just came in, and they were like, yeah, I don't really know what my sexuality is, but I don't think it's straight, but I don't know. I don't really want to label it. And I'm seeing more and more kids that are even just, you know, 4 years younger than me that are automatically saying that they don't want to label their sexuality. And I think that's the change you're going to see, is that less people are going to fall into this heteronormal idea of I'm straight until I'm not. And it's more of this idea that they don't want to label themselves until they have everything figured out. And that takes a while. And nobody has to have anything figured out to start out with. Like, when you're a freshman, you don't have anything figured out. You don't know what you want to be. And so sexuality is just becoming a part of that identity. And instead of starting out at this baseline of, oh, you're straight unless you figure out that you're not, instead it's just like, well, you don't know what you are for a long time. You might not ever really know what you are. So it's interesting.
I want to follow up with you and Wes on that, but just one thing you said there that caught my attention. You talked about referring to your struggle. Tell me about the struggle.
The struggle, it depends. You know, in our GSA at my school, we had multiple trans kids, and so that's a different struggle that I personally can't speak for because I've never gone through it, but I've seen my friends go through it, and that is just, it's a physical, emotional, social struggle that's really difficult. So,
and she's referencing here to be transgender, which means it's different than having a certain sexual orientation.
Sure.
Right. So that was really different. You know, for us, it's just the feeling of being scared. For me, it was unnecessary. I dated a girl for a little bit over a year, and she was out. And I was just so scared to come out. I was so sure that everyone was going to hate me. I had a really hard time with my parents with coming out because they found out. I didn't get to tell them. And it was just a difficult experience because I made it harder for myself. I thought that it was just going to be awful. And by the time that I realized that everyone knew and no one cared, it was, you know, almost a whole year later. So I think with that, there's just a lot of fear that comes with it. There's a lot of fear that people are going to reject you for who you are and for that baseline, you know, value, not even value, but just like this core part of who you are. You're afraid that someone's going to reject you automatically just because of that. And that's a big fear. That was a huge fear for me. And it was something that it took me almost 2 years to overcome. But once I did overcome it, it makes you feel just so much stronger than you ever knew that you could be, which sounds very cheesy, but it's true.
Let me back up a minute and get Wes's take on the question that I initially asked with regard to the changing times. A couple of things occur to me with what Julia has said. Number one, Kansas is known as a fairly conservative state.
I hadn't noticed that.
Well, to take my word for it. In any case, we know that. That's pretty much a given and well established. And yet the young people really are coming around and not having the kind of problems older people seem to have, many of them anyway. This is a generational thing, Wes.
It is. And not only – there's so much to say because that's the core of the issue right there. I had a fellow the other day I saw who I've seen in the past who is gay. And it has been very hard. He is about my age. It's been very hard for him. In the last few years, he has had what we would call the struggle to come to terms with this, the kind of standard. He would say it's a cliche. He's sort of self-deprecating. I would say it's the standard experience of that. This is so different than what young people today are experiencing. And young people in Julia's range and a little younger, as she points out, are the cutting edge. They are the leading edge of a change. And I saw this fellow the other day, and he said to me, I am so thankful to have teenagers in our world. They have made it so much easier for me. And I think it is generational, but it is, as it has so often been in our history, young people who've led us forward in this. And so for many of them, it isn't as big a struggle. Like, it's just really gauche right now to bully a gay teen, even in Kansas schools, in fairly conservative schools. Bullying a gay or transgender teen is considered among the peer group to be just, you know, very offensive. And so people are turning away from that and are being more inclusive because they want inclusiveness themselves.
This sets up a more or less classic confrontation, and that would be between the teens and their parents. But I have to take a break before we get back to that, and I think that's where we'll go next. We are talking with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a psychologist, board certified in couples and family psychology, and with Julia Poe, a Kansan, about to start her first year at USC in California. And we are talking about the issue of LGBT. Q issues, I might have.
You did that so good.
Well, that didn't sound that good to me, but we'll take a few more stabs at it before we're finished. We'll take that break now and come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on LGBT issues and teens in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Governor Jay Nixon is in town as part of a statewide tour today to call for enhanced law enforcement training standards in Missouri. He wants the Peace Officer and Standards Training Commission and the Missouri Department of Public Safety to come up with new regulations by December 1st. St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay is nominating 7 candidates for the city's first civilian oversight board. The panel will be tasked with independently reviewing complaints about the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. And convention and visitor business in St. Louis region appears to have bounced back following a rough period after last year's violence in Ferguson. But the head of the Convention and Visitors Commission says there is no doubt last year's unrest hurt the region's reputation. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Julia Poe and Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Julia, let me put that question to you with regard to the generational component and how it is reflected in relationships between you and your parents and your peers and your friends' relationship with parents.
Well, for me, my relationship with my parents really strengthened when we went through the process of coming out together. It was difficult at first. I tried to hide that I was dating a girl from them, and when they found out, it was really hard on them, both because I had been lying to them and because I, you know, had kept this part of myself from them. And it was a really awkward process over the next year and a half of just trying to figure out what to say and how to say it and sitting down and having conversations about what was okay to say and things that especially that my parents would say that might hurt my feelings and also just like lines that we had to draw as far as understanding how this would change different parts of my life. That being said, I had a really, really great process with my parents because my parents asked questions and they were always reassuring me that they still loved me no matter what, that this did not change anything about how they felt about me. And they just kept asking questions. When they didn't know something, they just asked, and that was good. You know, everything that I've seen with my friends has been a case-by-case scenario. I've had friends who have come out as transgender to their parents, and their parents have been entirely supportive and have helped them through every single step of the process. And then I have friends who are so afraid to come out to their parents that they won't even let their girlfriend come over to their house because they're afraid that their parents will figure it out just by seeing the two of them together. So it varies. I don't think it's generational. I still just think it's person to person how much change someone is able to take in their life. And I think that's definitely it's a struggle to realize that your child is different than you have automatically categorized them for the past 17 or 18 years.
Wes Crenshaw, it sounds like Julie's parents handled it just right.
Yes, and I would concur with everything she said based on my, you know, broad clinical experience with this. It varies. It does go person to person. It does help. You know, there are virtually no 30-year-olds that have teenagers at this point. They're just hitting that point where 30-year-olds have a very young teen, but there aren't very many of them. And so what we see is people under the age of 30 are the most accepting of gay and lesbian bisexual issues. So that group will now be moving into the parenting of teens category, and we'll see how they do. What we're seeing on the leading edge of that is that it's working out better than I think a lot of us thought. A lot of kids have the experience Julia has where they are surprised that friends and family are kind of already there. And so the coming out process has changed in my experience in the last 4 or 5 years to where I call it a more informal process where you instead of having this kind of gathering, you rent the church basement and you stand in front of the group and you have snacks and you say, I have something I must tell all of you. I am gay. Instead of that, you have a situation where you say, hey, you know, this is who I'm dating. This is Bill. And someone notices Bill is a guy and you're a guy. That has become much more typical for teenagers and young adults, that it's an informal process of introducing you to a person rather than a sexual orientation or identity.
Julia, how did you come to identify yourself as bisexual?
It was a long process. It was one of those things where I look back at it now and I probably had signs as early as, you know, 6th or 7th grade. I didn't really start noticing anything until the summer before my sophomore year of high school. And
Noticing what, if I may ask?
Noticing girls. I mean, just realizing that I had the same reaction of feeling even just little crushes, little amounts of attraction towards a girl in the exact same way that I would towards a guy. And I was not one of the kids who dated in middle school. I kind of hopped on that train late and didn't start until high school. And so I didn't really have any experience until high school. And I remember getting my first really big crush on a girl right before sophomore year. And in my head, I was just confused. I was kind of in that questioning state where I was like, okay, I know I'm feeling this way, but I also know that I'm not a lesbian because I like guys too. And I've dated guys, a guy. And so I was very confused. And that's when, like any good teenager, I took to the internet and started searching. And there are so many good things out on the internet if you look in the right places. And I was lucky enough to come across a lot of good websites that kind of explained the whole range of sexuality so I could figure out kind of where I was. And I was able to look at YouTube shows and kind of just start figuring out, okay, yeah, this is where I fall and this is how I identify. And by the end of sophomore year, I was at least comfortable enough with the fact that I was into girls and that I knew I fit somewhere on that spectrum to start dating a girl. And then everything just started slowly falling into place from there. And it was – I mishandled a lot of things. I Did a lot of things that were probably not the best, both to my girlfriend and to my friends because of it. And, but I think it made it a lot better. It made me a lot better now because I've learned from those mistakes
What did you do that you should remember?
She was really sneaky.
Mm-hmm. I was very sneaky. It's hard. I will say I feel bad for anyone who makes the commitment to date someone who is in the closet. The girl I was dating was out of the closet. Everyone knew. She had transferred to our school, so she was a new arrival at our school. And somehow everyone knew within a few weeks that she was openly lesbian. And it was like a big deal because there was no one out in our grade at that time. And she was a lipstick, which means that she was super feminine. And everyone was kind of like, ooh, how do we handle this? This is kind of interesting. And I became really close friends with her. And we dated for a year. And I was in the closet for that entire time. And that was so hard on her because she couldn't tell anyone. She couldn't talk to anyone about it. And yeah, that was so hard on her. And I wish I had not done that because I could have come out. And I didn't need to sneak. I didn't need to lie to my parents. And now I tell all my friends. I have a lot of friends who identify as LGBT. I tell all of them to never date someone until you're ready to come out, because it's cruel to that person and it's cruel to your parents if you're lying to them. And I mishandled that, and it was a real dent in my relationship with my parents, and I'm very proud of the fact that we fought to work back in that relationship.
Wes, what do you see in all of this?
I am of two minds about this, and I am about 70% where Julia is. The problem of being closeted, which there is still that issue, creates what's called a differential outness between the partners. And in the dating and, you know, very serious dating relationships especially, one partner may be far more out to family and friends than the other, which then invalidates the relationship for the less out partner and family. You can't go to Thanksgiving, or you can't go to the person's home, or do any of the things that you could do if you're more fully out. This becomes a big contentious issue in dating relationships and can cause the relationships to fail. So in that sense, I'm with her. The 30% that I'll hold back on is, for some young people, they will still be excommunicated from the family and perhaps booted from their church and their social relationships, particularly if those relationships come out of a faith community. And for those folks to not be able to date or to reach out to persons who are of their desired dating preference, it's pretty hard. And so I still have some defense, even though all of the problems that Julia is describing absolutely come to play. I guess my advice to families is love your kids and be supportive of them and let them go through some of this questioning without quite freaking out so much.
I want to open up our phone lines. I'm sure there are people who would like to get into this conversation, and we can give those numbers now. 382-8255 is the number. 382-8255, our number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or we'll take a tweet at STL on air. There are some other issues here that I have to get on the table, because in reading about this issue before we did this program, there are a number of things going on, and Julie, I guess we'll start with you because you're right there on the front line, if you will. The issue of bullying, of sexual assault, of depression, and most disturbing, teenage suicide. The number I have here is 30% of all teen suicides involve people such as yourself. You experienced any of this?
Yeah, I almost was in that statistic of that 30%. Definitely struggled from depression for a long period of time. I have my own issues with anxiety, and trying to stay in the closet while dating someone is the easiest way to take your anxiety through the roof. If you add that on to being in your junior year of high school and trying to take 4 AP classes, 10 out of 10 would not recommend that you do that. It was a terrible experience for me. So my entire junior year, I was extremely depressed. The summer before my junior year, I did try to kill myself, and was very, very lucky that that attempt was not successful. And, you know, it really does define the coming out experience for way too many LGBT youth. The fact that depression and suicide is on the forefront of so many LGBT youth's minds is really frightening. And I know that a lot of people think that that's overstated, and I just want to say that it's not. Even if you have the most accepting church group, family, friends, there's still this feeling of being so utterly different from everyone around you. And when you feel different and you feel like you don't belong, it's really, really hard to keep your head up and to keep other negative things away. And I don't think there's a single one of my friends who's LGBT who's not struggled with at least depression, if not suicidal thoughts, if not attempting. And it's too real of a statistic.
And although cutting, self-harm, is not actually correlated with suicidality, I have had quite a bit of experience lately with gay and lesbian teens in the process of trying to come to terms with that, who are also self-harmful just because of the emotional upheaval they feel. And the conflict, cutting often comes from having an irresolvable conflict that you feel like you just can't fix. And so you turn on yourself. And that is one of the conflicts, one of many, but one of them that I see.
Wes, Julia mentioned something a moment or two ago that I'd like to get your take on. And that was that she turned to the internet to get a lot of information, which she found useful. And people in the medical profession often warn against doing that sort of thing because you can come up with false diagnoses and false information, and then it can be more of a problem than a benefit. What do you think?
I have spent, as we are working on our book, Consent-Based Sex Education, I have spent a tremendous amount of time considering this and studying it. And it is my opinion, and from talking to young people, that on the whole, it is just exactly as Julia has described it, is a good thing. Now, I think when you are just out on the internet with nobody to talk to in real life and a feeling of isolation, even though you're developing an online community many times. I have a lot of young people who are involved in online communities where sexuality is a big part of it. So I think it is an imperfect scenario. I think the more kids can become in a dialogue with a competent adult and competent peers to talk about that kind of stuff, the better the internet becomes. The more the internet becomes the only source of information or even an isolating source, the more problems it can cause.
Julia, what about the use of social media, though, in this digital age? In terms of, is that useful to you in communicating issues with you and your peers?
It can be useful. It can be harmful. It depends on what your experience is. For me, I kind of have a positive and a negative example. Positively with social media, I've made a lot of friends from out of town through different journalism programs who identify as LGBT. And thanks to having smartphones and having group chats and that kind of thing, we're able to feel like we have this community of people who understand what it's like to be a bi 18-year-old girl. And, you know, just having people that I can talk to about that is really remarkable, because I have many friends who I respect who they don't live here, but I can keep up to date with them and get advice from them on something we share. Negatively, there is a social media site called Tumblr that is really, really popular, especially in my, at least as long as I was on it. It's very popular with LGBT youth. And it's basically, you can blog on it, but you can also connect to other people's blogs and have conversations that way. And the problem is that, like what Wes was talking about, you can isolate yourself very easily. It's easy to find people who feel similarly to you. So that's great if you're in a good place and you find people who are happy and, you know, really into a certain topic. You know, I used one religiously during the Women's World Cup because I loved talking to people who liked women's soccer. When I was depressed, I used it to talk to other people who were depressed and self-harming. And that was really negative because they did not try to talk me out of it. They just fed this feeling of depression, and basically everyone just got on Tumblr and wallowed in that feeling and didn't try to help themselves. So it's like what Wes said, it's kind of hit or miss. I've had great experiences with social media. I've had really, really poor ones that added to my depression. I think it comes down to just gauging how you feel And if you realize that a social media, an app or a site is making you feel worse, you just have to get off of it. You have to delete it. You have to take it off your phone, not let yourself visit it anymore, because that was what Tumblr was for me for a long time. And I got rid of it. And then I got a new one. And it's, you know, totally fine now because I'm not in that same place. I'm not depressed. I'm happy. And so I'm able to connect with happy people, not people who make me worse.
And good old Tumblr is like so addictive to young women that if it's a good experience, you may get addicted to that. If it's a bad experience, you may get addicted to that. It is just it's just online crack for young women. They love it.
Wes, what do you think? More pluses than minuses to this communication?
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, it's if you're building a healthy community, it is just a different way to build a community or to gather information. So if you go to the library and all you ever do is sit at the library 24 hours a day and read books, that's not actually healthy. Or if the only people you know are the librarian, that's not actually healthy. So we want to have a developed community, whether that's done online or in real life. In this day and age, it doesn't matter. The question is it doing exactly what Julia says? Is it building a sense of consent within yourself for sexuality, a sense of understanding, and a sense of positive self-regard? And the online community can be great for that, and it can be just, as Julia says, very detrimental.
I have to take another break. We'll do that now. We're talking about LGBT issues in teens. With me in studio, pardon me, is Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a psychologist, and Julia Poe joins us from Kansas City. She identifies herself as a bisexual. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call to 382-8255. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw and Julia Poe. We're talking about LGBT issues and how they relate to teens. Let's go right to the phones. Brant is with us, and he has an issue he'd like to bring to the table. So, Brant, go ahead. You're on the air.
I've wondered for a long time, and I've never heard this addressed anywhere, regarding transgenderism, and I think maybe the doctor might know about this. With any other medical issue, such as cancer, it's always a doctor that determines that. I could possibly think I have cancer and come in and the doctor would diagnose it. Okay, but it's ultimately the doctor's discernment that leads to a diagnosis. And I don't see how transgenderism, it seems like it's without the doctor's seconding the issue. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. Okay, so the first thing to understand is that under the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, being transgender is not a psychiatric condition. The current, as of October, the DSM-5 will kick in. Boy, this is going to get boring in a hurry. DSM-5 kicks in, and the term is gender dysphoria now. And that's the idea that a person could come in and receive treatment for feeling unhappy, feeling down about feeling that they are not physically in alignment with their psychological sexual self. So the determination of that isn't actually a medical diagnosis anymore. What does happen and what takes great specialization to do is to help a person determine if they are transgender, and if they are transgender, how much they want to make changes physically in their body to fit, make the reassignment fit their psychological self-understanding. So, you have to have a lot of training. I have a health certificate from the University of Michigan in both sex education and sex therapy. And within that specialization, there's a subspecialization in working with trans folks to make some of those determinations. Today, most of the trans folks I see are not seeking a physical, surgical procedure about their genitals. Some are seeking procedures with what's called top surgery, which is a change in the breasts one direction or the other. So there is a component for psychologists or medical doctors in some cases to do work with these folks, but it is no longer looked at as a psychiatric illness.
I think some people would find it unfortunate that Grant chose to connect dots between the transgender issue and cancer. I mean, obviously, we're two very, very different kinds of things.
Well, and one of the things when you're talking about this, I always want to be sensitive to people's learning experience because people are all over the board on this. Some people very much understand it and are comfortable with it, and other people see it like cancer. And that kind of brings me to a good part about the coming out process. One of the things that therapists have done over the years that I think is not helpful is when a parent comes in and they say, my daughter is gay, and I just feel terrible about this. The therapist will often talk about this as a grief process. And while that seems logical to say I'm grieving the idea of my daughter being heterosexual and that she's going to have babies with a man, I kind of understand the sense of loss. But how GBLTQ folks feel when you say that is you're dead. You know, it's like a funeral. And that can be a very hard message. It's better to help parents deal with that sense of it being a transitional part of life, just like going away to college or getting married or any of the other transitions that we have both sadness and joy about.
While we're talking transgender here, and Julie, I'll start with you on this. Of course, the Caitlyn Jenner story has gotten an enormous amount of play in recent weeks. And it's been my observation that a lot of people, when this first emerged, snickered about it. You know, they kind of made fun about it. And I'm just wondering if overall the Caitlyn Jenner story was advanced the LGBT cause or maybe did just the opposite. What do you think?
I think it's too early to tell on that. I'm really interested to see what happens after, you know, you had the ESPYs and you had all of the coming out shows and the front cover on magazines, you know, all of the hype. But once all the hype dies down and we get a year out from it, I think that's when we can really start to see, okay, did this change anything? I think the main thing it did was it brought the conversation into everyone's backyards. It made it completely unavoidable where there's not really anyone who hasn't heard about what happened with Caitlyn, and there's not anybody who really hasn't at least had one conversation about it, whether that's making fun of it, whether that's making some crude joke about it, or whether that's actually having a genuine conversation. It sparked a lot of conversation with my friends. You know, I have friends that are all along the range of their support for the LGBT community. And friends that I've had who were highly supportive of my sexuality were very negative towards Caitlyn Jenner. And it was interesting for me to see that. I think mainly what it has done so far is been a conversation starter and been a face that people can put to the transgender community. I mean, obviously, I'm in full support of Caitlyn. I think that anyone should be able to do what they feel is best for them, for their own personal sexuality, their own identity of themselves. But it's too early to see whether it's done good or bad. She just has a lot to do with it still.
That is just spoken like the journalist that you are, Julia. Such a really well-reasoned answer. My only thing to add to that is to say I have actually been surprised at how non-snarky the conversation has been about Caitlyn Jenner. Sure, there has been some snickering, but I think it has been a surprisingly elevated conversation about this issue. Ooh, I think it's headed.
You're not friends with high school boys,
well,
then.
No. Well, yeah. Oh, so many jokes. Which one to choose? We mustn't judge the elevation of that conversation by teenage boys, but it really is, I think, a better discussion than what was potentially going to be there, especially with some of the. Just sort of everybody watched Caitlyn Jenner's transition, and I think that was everybody knew Bruce and saw this transition, and I think it could have gone so wrong so many ways, and it actually has been educative in many ways, imperfectly so, but educative.
Does this conversation change at all when we bring into the discussion poor people, minorities? Mm. Is there any real difference in attitudes and approaches that would be reflected in those groups?
One response I would have is I think that this is definitely an issue in the black community that is differentially experienced. There's a film called Pariah, which is a really good film about a young late teen lesbian and the struggle she has in her community to come out. It's a fairly recent film, but one of the things that's hard about films is if it isn't fairly recent, as in March of this year, it isn't really recent. So this is probably 4 or 5 years old. So it's a little dated, but I think it does illustrate, it did for me, how different it is in the black community versus the majority community. Each culture has different usually faith-related experiences of what it means to be gay and transgender, and so I think we're seeing that evolve. But yes, it's different in each community.
Can you relate to that, Julia?
I'm going to have to bow out on that one. I go to a school where we recently published an article about how we only have 28 black students at our school
and
that has almost 2,000 students. right, at a very big school. So I do not come from a diverse student body, and I don't really have a lot of experience with that. I will say that the only difference I do see with people coming out is where they are. When I was in California, a lot of the kids that I was working with at this camp I was counseling were very open about being LGBT. And then when you get down into the South, you're going to see a big difference. So I do think that your culture affects a lot of how open you can be. It doesn't mean that there's not as many gay people down in the South, down in Alabama, as there are in California. It just means they're not talking about it as much.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
While we're talking about schools, schools can play a role in all of this. I noticed that, Julia, earlier on you were talking about the Gay Straight Alliance organization within your school. Just explain a little bit more about that and how useful it is to people like yourself.
Right. So our GSA started out pretty small, but it's basically just a group of people that came together once a week. We had a teacher who sponsored us, but who half the time wasn't even in the classroom because she didn't really see it as being her business to know what everyone's sexualities were. And normally she just, if she was in the classroom with us, she had her headphones in to make sure that she wasn't really intruding on our conversation. And most of the time we just sit around and eat snacks and talk about anything but sexuality. But it was this idea of having people who were similar to us. And, you know, I started going when I started getting more comfortable with my sexuality. And I had two of my guy friends who started going, even though they weren't out, they felt comfortable going to GSA because after a few weeks, they could get the guts up to say, I identify as gay or I identify as bisexual. And that was a huge step in their process of being able to come out to their families, being able to just be more comfortable. So having a good GSA in your school, no matter how big or small it is very, very helpful in just creating confidence.
I have an email here that I think is an excellent question. What recommendations do you have for people organizing rooming assignments for high school trips? For example, if a person identifies as transgender, how can this be respected? I'll take your response to that, Wes, first.
Yeah, Julie and I have talked about some of these things in terms of roommates in college also and in related issues. The first thing we have to sort of learn is heteronormative. And Julia used it earlier. And that means the sort of mainstream idea we have that boys and girls are the opposite sex and therefore they shouldn't room together or they're the ones who are going to be sexually involved. This is kind of over in our culture, and we have to instead not make any assumptions. And believe me, I'm talking to teenagers all the time, and Julia is not alone in having this sort of what we refer to as pansexuality, this sense of picking a partner based on who the person is and then working your sexual interests around that. So the possibility that one might not identify as gay, very clearly identify as gay, does not mean that person might not have a same-sex attraction. So imagine the problems, if you will, that could create if you have some sexual tension between two people rooming. So one of the things that I think where we're headed on this is that people are just being more clear about it. It's almost a little much. Like I know groups where they go around and ask, you know, what pronoun you want to be referred to as the first thing you discuss. So you know whether you're identifying male, female, et cetera. This is very popular now, even in college orientation, to really try to get that down and to work some of those assignments around that.
I have less than a minute left, Julia. Can you add to that in 30 seconds for me?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to base it off of how comfortable people are. And if someone's out or if someone's transgender, you've got to talk to the kids on the trip and see where they're at and ask them to be honest with you. You don't want to put anyone in an awkward situation. If someone is feeling uncomfortable about it, they're going to make the trans kid feel just as uncomfortable. So open communication is the key with everything when it comes to sexuality.
Very, very good advice. We're going to have to leave this discussion at that. I think it's been a good one, and I think a lot of people have learned a lot. And Julia Poe, thank you so much for bringing us your perspective on this, and best of luck to you as you start your first year at USC.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us, Wes Crenshaw. It's, as always, a pleasure seeing you. Thank you so much for being with us.
It is always a joy to be here, Don.